I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. And as usual, we've already started the show like half an hour ago talking about clothes, but we won't bother everybody with that. We will jump right into the questions. So first question from our buddy Dan at Wacom. He says, with Paul out of the way and Ping on hiatus, there's no other show that can challenge you for Channel 9 dominance, except maybe this week on Channel 9. Thank you.
We are our worst own competition, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. So watch your backs, all I'm saying. I do have a question regarding a strange issue I'm having. I changed a theme on my home system, Windows 8, and it also changed and synced Samsung Build tablet, which was cool. But it set the screensaver. No big deal. I turned that off, but it still locks at the 15-minute timeout, even though the screensaver isn't set. Other strangeness, I can't increase the screensaver timeout value. I set it to 20 minutes, click apply, and that seems to take, but when I close it and reopen it, it's back to 15 minutes. It gets weirder. I was able to set it to 14 minutes. I like to just set the tablet running while plugged in, no matter what. I try, it locks after an inactive period equal the screensaver timeout value, regardless if the screensaver is set to none or not.
So first of all, remember, screen timeout value is different than screen saver timeout value.
Yeah.
Make sure that you've got, under more power options, under your power, choose when to turn off the display. Make sure that you've, you know, changed these values to whatever higher value that you want. The other thing that you have to remember is if you're using a Microsoft account on your Windows 8 systems and you've also got it hooked up to a domain account, you might have a domain policy that's being synced.
Yeah. So it might be a group policy thing if that's the case, and then in which case you'd have to talk to your IT admin, right? Okay.
Something to remember, though, is it is still kind of a waste of power to leave your screen running all the time.
Yeah.
Screen savers, just in general, internally, we don't really care much for screen savers anymore because we're more all about the power efficiency and turning things off when you're not actually using it.
I know, Gove, but I love, you know me, I love the eye candy. I like the screen saver.
You love the candy.
Yes.
Shiny bubble.
I know. I got a candy problem. All right, from Philip, Wicked Show, watch it every week, and Defrag Tools, removing clients from SBS 2008 to SBS 2011 and joining a new domain. Is there any way to save the predicted text used in Outlook 2010? So he's talking about the type ahead, where you start typing someone's name and it fills it out and they want to retain those. Across this migration, and you said,
well, there it used to be in a contained in a completely separate file in previous versions of Office, and they've now switched that to a hidden file, and it's completely unsupported. But you have the path.
See users, username, app data, local, Microsoft Outlook, Roam cache, stream _ autocomplete _ string of digits.
It's a random GUID-like string of letters and numbers specific to your user account. If you want to copy that over, that should work. I haven't tried it out, but hey, it's completely unsupported. If they happen to change it again, that's up to them. It'll break. So
that file, is there any way for me to manually edit that so I can add and remove the ones I like? No. All right. Well, figured I'd ask. All right. And again, not supported, but there you have it. From Benya Boy in the comments, this seems like a perfect place to ask this question. Why is restoring a system image so incredibly slow? What is it doing? I barely see the hard drive light coming on. I'm about 25% after 5 hours. The image is about 95 gig. Creating the image only took 40 minutes or so. New hard drive is a 256 gig SSD.
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening when you do the restore?
A couple of things happen during the restore, right? You have to verify the image is correct.
Mm-hmm.
It may be in a verification stage. It has to decompress the image into a temporary space in order to then copy that data to the actual location that it's trying to restore to.
Yeah. And my laptop is taxing for takeoff again here, but pay no mind.
I mean, a
that.
95 gig image, it's not a small image by any means, mm-hmm. right? So what was the time that he said that he's at?
Let's see here. He says 5 hours. He's at 25% after 5 hours. That seems like an awful long time.
That does seem like an awful long time.
20 hours to do a So what are the things that you could do to speed that up? I mean, he's copying to an SSD, so it's not like he can defrag that. Defrag the hard drive that had the image on it, maybe?
That could potentially help. I mean, if there wasn't a contiguous space of 95 gig or the temporary, the old drive doesn't have a lot of space on it, you could look for that. Disable any antivirus scanning. I mean, yeah, that does seem like a pretty long time. I'd be interested to see if he can continually repro that for restoring smaller images, see how long it actually takes.
Yeah, okay. All right, next from Anita. This is an email we got at defragtools@microsoft.com. We're pleased to inform you that of the release of a long-awaited result of sweepstakes promotion organized by Microsoft Corporations, Corporation, plural, Microsoft Corporations, in conjunction with the Foundation for the Promotion of Software Products in Madrid, Spain, where your email address emerged as one of the online winning emails in the second category. So we didn't win first place, but we're second, and therefore we've attracted a cash award of 350,000 euros and an HP laptop. I tell you what, you take the money, I'll take the laptop. Fair enough? Good. To begin your claim, do the following. Email this email address at mcom.com, which sounds like a legitimate Microsoft email address
mcom.
To me.
Com, yeah. Of course.
This is sponsored by the former CEO and chairman, Bill Gates, blah, blah, blah. Wow. You sent that to a Microsoft.com email address. Congratulations, Anita. Yeah, so... just worth pointing out that this is just a completely ridiculous scam, fraud.
I think our listeners and viewers, you know, they would not be fooled by any of this. But, you know, I was reading some interesting statistics, and that the spammers, you know, these email types, email spammers, they aren't going after, they have no delusions that they're going after a large percentage of people.
Yeah.
They're going after the people that aren't really reading it. They're just clicking. Right?
Yeah, they're the one in the million because they're hitting a million.
Right, they're actually hitting a relevant number of people to continually do this.
Yeah.
They know that not everybody's going to do it. They know like 95 to 97% of people aren't going to click on it.
Yeah.
It's that 3%.
Yeah.
You know?
And it is ridiculous. I include it just because it's so funny that it came into a Microsoft.com email address at all. So there you have it. But yeah, spam. From Benjamin, like Gov, I'm one who doesn't prefer Windows borders to be transparent. However, on desktop, Pixel 00 is always white when transparency is disabled. If something, possibly from Windows, has a window open but is trying to hide it, in the worst way possible. While it's extremely small and I don't notice it often, it still annoys me knowing that it's there. It seems to be a pretty common bug, according to a quick search that is in Windows 7. I was wondering if there's any workarounds to this. It says, P.S., there seems to be a bit of... this may seem like a bit outrageous of a request, but is it possible to get any of the basic themes running with the Aero compositor? I prefer Vista 7 basic theme, but its rendering method causes some newer programs not to draw correctly.
So this particular person also sent us a screenshot, and I looked at the screenshot. I couldn't actually see the 00 white pixel issue. I looked really hard, expanded it, I still couldn't see it. But as far as I know... in Windows, we don't have anything as part of the base OS where 00 is colored anything differently than what it should be.
Yeah.
Whether or not Aero is on or off.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be another third-party application. I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to look at a system that would be doing this. You can use a tool called Spy++ if you think that it is a hidden window for something. To pass your cursor, one of the options is to like spy over Windows. You can take your cursor, use Spy++, part of the dev tools, the Windows SDK, and you can hover your mouse over that particular spot and see if anything interesting shows up. I'd love to see that because, Lord knows, I have not seen it. For the second request, for prior to Windows 8, no, it's not possible to do that. However, Windows 8, the basic themes are composited.
Mm-hmm.
So, yay, Windows 8, composition on by default. Everything uses it, even the basic themes.
Cool. Okay, next question from Eddie. He says, A few issues with streaming stuff from my Windows 7 Pro PC using the built-in sharing options. One, when I right-click on MKV or M4V, the Play 2 option doesn't appear, but when I go to the file from WMP12 interface and right-click, the option appears and streams fine to my TV. The extra steps of opening Windows Media Player and finding the file there are annoying. How can I make Play 2 option appear for those files when I right-click on them? That's one, so we'll start with that.
For that one, you're going to have to do potentially some registry hacking in order to make that particular option show up for that file, because MKV is not natively known by the OS. You must have installed like the Matroska splitter or the Holly Media splitter. For M4V, do you have iTunes installed? Because I'm pretty sure Windows also doesn't recognize that one by default, at least not Windows 7. So it's however those files have been registered on the system, you'd have to make sure that the Play 2 option is also enabled for those extensions. Now, Windows Media Player, because the codecs are present, knows how to say, oh, okay, this is just a media file. I'll go do everything myself.
Yeah.
So that's basically why you're able to do it in Windows Media Player, but not through the shell.
And then part two, in the streaming options, there are videos, music, pictures, and recorded TV options. Does this mean that Windows 7 allows DLNA access only to those folders or to the examples in the video library and the locations it includes? If it's a former, how can I share other locations with DLNA devices?
So the way that I've done this in the past, and I've, you know, to be honest, I don't use DLNA all that often. It just is a little bit more convoluted for what I tend to do.
Yeah.
But what I do is in Windows Media Player, when I turn on network sharing, I set up a playlist, and that playlist can point to any location.
Mm-hmm.
And then that playlist will show up to the DLNA device and will play whatever media is available with that playlist.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I have a PC on every TV now.
That's where so. I'm at, too. It is just a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, set for auto updates, do it at 3 a.m. I never really have to worry about it. Windows Media Center.
Yeah.
Up in as the shell. So,
okay, from Joseph, I have an external hard drive that's causing Windows 7 to freeze when booting up. Simple repro: one, reboot computer with external hard drive plugged in, turn on; two, machine starts booting and freezes on starting Windows screen after logo; three, if I turn off external hard drive after it's frozen, Windows will finish booting up. This gets me in trouble when I reboot remotely and can't turn off my hard drive. Any ideas what's going on? So, yeah, you had a good suggestion. You said you need to change the boot order so it doesn't try to boot from the external storage. Do you think it was trying to boot from the external storage if the...
Honestly...
got to the Windows logo?
We kind of went back and forth on this one, and he gave a little bit more information. It wasn't a standard external hard drive, you know, that you'd normally plug in. It's an external hard drive dock. And the particular one that he had, I've had in the past and have never had really good success with. It has frozen up every machine that I've ever had it connected to.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a bad USB controller chip that it uses.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, he just said that it started working.
Yeah, he said, I unplugged both drives and reboot worked, then I added a drive and it worked. Finally added both drives and it worked, and then he rebooted about five times with no issue, so it appears it's mysteriously gone away.
Which is just weird.
It happens, though, you know? So, yeah. All right, so next question
You go to the next question, I would recommend, you know, to those folks that have those external docks to either replace them, you know, move off of those external dock. They appear to be, you know, useful at some points, but more often than not, I've seen hard drives fail in them. Their, you know, voltage regulators aren't all that great.
So this is where you, like, cartridge load a hard drive. That's exactly what I use at home every day for my most important media, and I'm very concerned now that you've said this.
You might have a good one.
Yeah.
So, granted, the last time that I ever used one was about 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I went through about half a dozen of them because they were all just crapping out on me.
Yeah.
And this is on various hardware. So they could have gotten better. You know, might find a USB 3 one, which would be good.
That's what I use. Or I have a USB 3 one.
Yeah. So I mean, the ones that I was using was not USB 3.
Yeah.
I have had a few of them,
and I do have one that was really, it was bad enough that I just threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I'm using now is USB 3, and we use a couple of them here in the studio because we have to, because of the way we shuffle around hard drives. But yeah, it's the primary way that I use a hard drive at home. Okay.
Well, I mean, try them out. You might have better luck.
Yeah. I've never had that problem, though, where it prevented, but I have seen that, where if I have a hard drive connected to my PC, it doesn't boot, and mm-hmm. I have to unplug it and replug it back in.
Right.
All right, from Joseph. No, this is next. From James. Hey, guys, here's a quick question that's been driving me nuts for months. I cannot delete or uninstall these extra virtual network adapters in Device Manager. I probably need to remove them from the registry. Can you please tell me how I can locate the correct places to delete each of these in the registry? If I uninstall the program that installed them, they still remain. The program that he's talking about is VirtualBox.
So I dug around quite a bit, actually, for the way that VirtualBox installs its software.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the best method to get rid of those virtual network adapters is using a system restore.
Yeah. And you have to restore it back before you installed VirtualBox. Yeah. It seems odd that uninstalling VirtualBox doesn't actually get rid of these.
It doesn't clean itself up properly.
Hmm. And if you actually go into the Device Manager and you delete these manually,
they don't actually delete.
They just come back.
Now, the picture that he sent, though, is he was viewing hidden devices,
mm-hmm.
or disconnected devices, can't actually tell.
Yeah.
So they probably aren't going to cause any issues by having them being left there,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, the cleanest method for VirtualBox is actually system restore until they get their uninstaller worked out properly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, this is from an internal email that was going around in our group, and it says, does anyone have an Ethernet crossover cable I can borrow for a week or two? Someone else wrote, you don't actually need one of these days. Most computers and laptops are auto-sensing and will switch pairs for you, so two computers can connect. I just use a regular cable to hook my two laptops together so they can connect a network to each other. That's interesting. I was thinking about this. If you have a lot of data that you need to move from one machine to another, I mean, typically I would hook it up to a external hard drive or use a thumb drive. If you have a lot of data, a thumb drive is not going to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk a little bit about this, just hooking up an Ethernet cable between two PCs to do a fast copy from one to the other. What do you need to know there?
So it is not usually quite as simple as just plugging them in, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're dealing with a user, so if you're dealing with somebody that may not necessarily have full control over their machine, so let's say it's a lockdown resource,
yeah,
right? So you may not be able to do the network crossover connection very well. So in that case, you kind of have to use the external hard drive. But in order to do the network crossover, you have to make sure that you're disabled your wireless,
mm-hmm.
right? When you plug in the cable, you have to either manually set your IP address to be like 192.168.1.1 on one machine and 1.2 on the other machine, or you let the auto-assigned 169.254.whatever.whatever set up so your machines are using different IP addresses.
Yeah.
Then you have to make sure that file and printer sharing is enabled.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to make sure that the file and printer sharing is enabled in the firewall. Then you have to set up a share for whatever it is that you're trying to copy over. Again, not very difficult to do. You know, you just find whatever it is that you are trying to share. Say this, share with specific people. And, you know, you can put in a specific person, create a new local account on your machine that'll have access to this, share it out, and it'll set up a network path. Then you go to the other machine and then connect to it, and then you can just copy things across.
So if you're hooked up to a router with both machines, there's no benefit to doing this. It's going to be the same speed, right?
Basically, yeah. It's going to be the same speed.
And for Wi-Fi, I mean, it's going to be a lot better than copying something from Wi-Fi if you've got a huge copy to do. And if you're, like, on a plane with two laptops, then, of course, you're not going to have a router, and so that might be the best benefit.
And you happen to be sitting right next to the person.
Yeah, of course. You don't don't run network cables down through a plane. They frown on that, I've found, especially for playing games. So there's an option, though, if you get stuck and you do happen to have a network cable in your bag and no external hard drive. Yeah.
Carry.
I'm not surprised. It's one of the many things in your go bag.
It is, but I also keep, a 1 terabyte drive with that SATA that can actually hook up via SATA or USB, so
yeah,
you kind of have to be prepared for anything.
Yeah, I got a terabyte and a half portable drive that I keep in my bag. It's USB 3. It's super fast, so yeah, I'm happy to use that. All right, next email. I want to assign some text to function keys in Windows 7. For example, I want to press F5 and have it paste 000, or press F6 to paste .00. What's the options there? You'd have to use third-party software to do that, right?
You got to use third-party software, unfortunately.
So one that you found this morning was hotkeys.
Yep. I think we might have talked about this one before.
I'm pretty sure we did, because I remember you talking about this.
It works pretty well.
Yeah, so you could do this, that would do exactly what you're talking about. You can change the function keys. Function keys, though, I don't know about this. I'd rather have, like, some kind of macro utility that I could do a key combination. I just can't see wanting to replace my function keys.
True. And, I mean, function keys tend to be program-specific, so
yeah.
You don't necessarily want it to do something in one program, or you don't want it to be doing something across all your programs.
Yeah, pasting 000 into Photoshop, just not worth it. But, yeah, I could see where if you do that all day long, that's something you'd want to do. But I think I'd still go with a macro of some sort. But
either way, but it's going to be a keyboard combination of something.
Okay.
Office can do this, you know, by the way. If you're using Word, the keyboard shortcut for macros can easily do this without having to use just the single function keys.
Yeah. All right. My Windows 7 machine is frustrating me. It can't hold a date. At one point, it all worked fine, but now it will decide that it needs to change the system time to a random time and date, either in the future or the past. There seems to be no correlation or set interval when it happens. To remedy, I've correctly set the time in BIOS, replaced the motherboard battery with a new CR2032, even checked it with a multimeter, tried disabling automatic internet synchronizing via date and time dialog, stopped, restarted, left, disabled the Windows Time service. Yet with all these actions, the time will continue to change. Any ideas?
I'd say there's some third-party app on your system that's doing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, clearly systems don't randomly change time.
Yeah.
I would actually reset your automatic time synchronization to the internet service. Now, a lot of the way that the default is set. Let's see. Oh, I can't do that because I'm domain joined. Okay, never mind. This machine can't go to the thing that I wanted to show you.
Yeah, don't look at mine. Mine won't either.
In the date and time control panel, if you go to date and time, you go change date and time, there'll be another additional tab that says internet time.
Yeah.
If you go to internet time, it defaults to time.windows.com. You can change that to any of the other NIST time servers. You can add your own time server. You can go look on the internet to add different time servers. Your ISP might actually provide time server on their network for you.
Mm-hmm.
Time tends to be handled through DNS, but I would actually recommend turning that on. Now, as for finding the program that is screwing around with your time, that's a super good question. I mean, without debugging the machine and seeing who's doing an update time, you're really not going to be able to find that out.
It should show you in the logs, though, if something changes the time, shouldn't it?
Not necessarily. So the Windows Time Service will tell you when the time has been updated, but since he's turned off the time service, he's not going to get that information.
Okay. All right. Next question. I've set up a scheduled task in Windows 7 Pro to open up Internet Explorer 9 x86 version kiosk mode. The scheduled task executes when a certain user logs in, and this user is logged in automatically when Windows starts. The command I'm using is C program files Internet Explorer iExplorer.exe-k, and then a URL. So far, so good. The computer boots up. The user gets logged in. IE opens up in kiosk mode. The problem is that IE seems to open behind the taskbar. So the taskbar, start menu, pin programs, etc. Appear at the bottom of the window, and the bottom of the IE window is visible, although the taskbar, since the taskbar is translucent. Is there anything I can do, preferably without installing any third-party programs, to ensure that IE9 kiosk window is always open in front of the taskbar? I've seen this a few times. I have a machine at home where I run VLC and, you know, go full screen. It still has a taskbar at the bottom. And what I usually have to do is I click VLC window on the screen, and I click the taskbar, and I click VLC again, and then it gets rid of the taskbar for me. So if you can do it, that's one option that you could do. But what's what would you say to
I'd say just auto hide the taskbar.
Yeah.
Just right click properties.
Auto hide taskbar.
Auto hide taskbar.
And so that'll get rid of it too. And talk for someone who doesn't know about kiosk mode. What is kiosk mode?
Kiosk mode is just basically full screen, i.e., where you're not able to exit from it, which is great if you're
in a kiosk.
If kiosk,
yeah.
That's really all it is just full screen mode.
And then to get out of that, if you can't exit, well, you Control-Alt-Delete.
Control-Alt-Delete.
End the process.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week. So the first one we have is 7 strange ways to cool your PC, which is kind of interesting. We're going to just go through. We're going to talk about the ones we like, slam the ones we don't. The first one's a turbocharger. I think it looks awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like a blower coming out of your old Hemi. It's cool looking. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're cooling your computer and you're heating everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of like it. I'd have to hear how loud that thing is. It just looks loud.
Yeah, it looks loud.
So, but and that might be good when you're putting a turbocharger on a car, not so much for the PC. Mineral oil is my least favorite method people use for cooling, because when I need to, like, reseat my card or, do anything, First of all, it's just the most impractical thing of all time. But if you haven't seen this before, yeah, you can submerge your entire PC in mineral oil. It'll keep the PC cool.
You still have to circulate the mineral oil a little bit.
Do you? I would just think that, the transfer of heat would allow it to, even without circulating, but I guess it wouldn't hurt. I mean, there is that box off to the side that looks like a DVD drive, though. But, yeah, I mean, so mineral oil will cool your PC. It seems like the most ridiculous way to cool a PC, though,
it does.
My opinion.
It does.
So that is probably the absolute last one I would do.
Draining the PC.
Yeah, and, I gotta change a jumper or whatever you gotta do. You're putting on gloves or I don't know.
Whatever. Imagine lugging that thing to a LAN party. Do people do LAN parties anymore?
No one does it anymore. It's all just Xbox Live. So the next one's industrial fan. Been there, done this.
Oh yeah.
Done this. This is not a good option because one, it's loud. Two, look at the dust on the back of the fan.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just not a great option. But I think a lot of us have done this just to, you have a heat problem, and so you end up having to do this.
Your CPU fan has died, and you can't get a replacement all that quick, so you stick an industrial fan.
Yeah, you could do that. So there's the industrial fan. Ice Cube, this is ridiculous, and that's not a PC in there. It looks like a hard drive in there.
Not only is it a hard drive, it's a hard drive with an IDE cable.
Yeah, so anyway, it says, unless this person's modified drive spin at 50,000 RPM, encasing it in a block of ice seems like overkill. I would say, yeah, encasing in a block of ice is overkill and impractical for a number of reasons. But, yeah, someone did it. There you have it. There's a picture.
Don't also forget, right, like when you go overboard with your cooling, you're changing the properties of the materials that you're trying to protect. So a hard drive was never designed to be encased in a block of ice or to deal with those temperatures.
Exactly. And I think if that were my hard drive in that block of ice, I probably would have put it in a baggie before I froze it in the block of ice, because water.
Well, I mean, unless it's pure distilled water, you're still gonna be screwed.
Yeah. So anyway, I would have done that. AC unit. This is one that I have done before. So I used to have a PC that ran really hot, and whenever I'd start playing games, it would lock up on me. And so what I had is, it was in Florida, and so my office, because it would get hot anyway with all the computers in there, I had a window unit air conditioner in there, and it was right behind my server rack. So I just stuck a piece of conduit, like, air conditioner, it's like a dryer vent kind of thing, onto the side of one of the vents on the air conditioner and ran it into the back of my PC. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. It would keep my PC cool, definitely. The problem that I had, and I don't think it was a problem in the computer as much as in the tube that went to the computer, was condensation.
Yep.
So there's that. But that was actually probably my favorite way to cool my PC down when it was overheating. PVC fan, wow, that's... That's something else. That's like a 57 Chevy radiator going on there. So yeah, you could build a PVC case, which isn't the most attractive case, I have to be honest with you. It's not going to win any awards there, but yeah, huge fan on the side. This is kind of like integrating the industrial fan one
exactly
into the PC.
I mean, what would be cool is if you could still get, you know, tubes of water running through it.
Yeah.
So it'll act like a radiator.
Yeah, so it actually is your 57 Chevy radiator. All right, and then the last one is World of Fans, which is ridiculous. And don't let your kids anywhere near this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
This thing is, this is the finger ripper-upper.
Or your cat.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, inverting a bunch of fans into your PC. I hope some of those are pointing out and some are pointing in. Hopefully, like, you know, one side's
directional,
just like pass through.
Yeah.
So it's grabbing air from one side and passing it through to the other. But once you turn this on, there's no picking this thing up, and I can't imagine the sound that thing makes.
Oh, but yeah.
It looks like someone who just had way too many fans sitting around. It's like, hey, I think I'll make a case out of this. But yeah, so there's that.
Inventive.
Yeah. And then the other pick of the week that we have this week is a BBC video you can watch about some Windows 8 tablets that are going to be coming.
Convertibles.
It's talking about convertibles. So it's talking about the machines that go from being a Windows 8 kind of desktop mode into having a tablet that you can snap off and you've got touch. If you follow a lot of the tech news, you're not going to see anything here that you probably haven't seen before. But it's kind of interesting. They walk through some of the different machines like the Yoga and some of the other ones and how they slide, fold, twist, turn, do different things to get a tablet one. It was interesting that the BBC starts off with this guy out in the desert burying his desktop, which there's no desert like that in the UK, is there?
If there is, I don't know where it is. But I wouldn't be surprised.
They commissioned someone to fly out to a desert just for the first few seconds of this video. But
maybe they filmed it in Yakima. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, so kind of interesting. We can link to it and you can watch that and see some of the new Windows 8 machines that potentially we'll be using in the coming
What I really
days,
liked
months,
about
years.
It is that like it just showed what is capable, you know, what's going to be coming in the next, next year.
Yeah.
That is really, really cool. Just the various types of things that you can do with it and how it enables the user. It's like, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, there's a machine out there for you to do it with.
Yeah.
Thin, light, lots of battery life, touch when you want touch, keyboard when you want keyboard. Something that, you know, you can do your real work on,
mm-hmm.
which is really, really cool. I mean, is it a device where you're just sitting on a couch and you're doodling? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So you get one that's pen-enabled and you can do some art with it, and it's like, oh, you need to do some actual Photoshop editing with mouse and keyboard. Yeah, you can do that too.
Yeah. And plus, you know, you want something that's going to be a powerful machine that you can use all the time. That was another story that was out this week, is that it kind of slipped out that Microsoft employees are going to be using Windows 8 machines here and coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
So do you have your machine picked out for your refresh yet?
I do not. The machines that I use for work are actually my machines.
Yeah.
So I like to pimp out what I use. So when I refresh, it will have to handle, you know, my RAID 10 system with, you know, 12 terabytes of space.
Yeah. So I'm leaning towards the Surface Pro because I want the pen.
It's a great machine.
Yeah. And I like that, you know, it's a Microsoft device. And so that's where I'm heading, I think.
I do not think that you'll be disappointed.
No. All right, so that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, or you can leave comments in the show notes, and we can get back and forth with you. Gove, he likes the email. When you email him, he wakes up in the middle of the night, rolls out of bed, and starts helping you with your problem. So the email is a little bit better for us than the comments, because we can go back and forth with you. So that's the show for this week. See you next week.